Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, we talk about our upcoming trip to the Magic Kingdom.
We chat with Dustin about Disney dining reservations and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Howdy, partners. For your safety, remain seated with your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast. And be sure to watch your ears. If any of you folks are wearing hats or glasses, best remove them, because Tag and Teresa have the wildest ride in the wilderness.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of July 14th, 2020. I'm Tag Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. Just a couple of show notes. This month, our show is going to sound a little differently. As some of you may know, we are heading out to the parks, and part of that is Tag is taking this amazing road trip. So the two of us are actually only going to be together in July, the week that we're in Disneyland. So we've got some fun things planned for you those other weeks. However, since we will not be together, there will not be much in the way of reporting on the news. Of course, when we're in the parks, we will report on the news as we see it and experience it and get to like do it. I'm so excited. We get to like be there and report on the news, right? How exciting is that? But anyways, we will be reporting on news. However, this week, there will not be any news.
There also won't be any news. The next time there will be news will be August 4th episode.
So it's going to be a very news-heavy episode.
Now, we do have an idea for a discussion topic, but we need your help for it.
Yes.
So if you want to send in, the email address for this will be feedback@dlweekly.net. You can always send us email at that for anything. But specifically right now, what we're looking for is we want to kind of do a Q&A for us in that first episode when we're back in August. So if you can send in any questions, or you can send in multiple questions if you'd like, and it's about questions about like our thoughts on the parks, or like questions about stuff in the parks, or questions about us or the podcast. Basically anything, we'll ask it on the show.
This was a really fun idea that actually came from one of our listeners, Chris, while she was watching, I believe it was a Fresh Baked episode. While she was watching, she was thinking, I wonder what David's favorite scene in whatever attraction it was is. So that kind of got her to thinking, oh, that'd be fun for like Tag and Teresa to like talk about that stuff too, because we don't talk about, I mean, you guys know our favorite attractions, you know what we like for food, but you don't know like some of those specific things. So we thought that'd be a really fun way to kind of bring back the podcast once we kind of get back to our normal thing after this month. So please write in to feedback@dlweekly.net with your questions.
So now this time we're going to head directly into our discussion topic, because we do not have any news for this week. For this discussion topic, we're basically going to pick our like top three things that we're excited for and kind of talk about what we're looking forward to at our trip here. And then we're also going to talk about some food stuff a little bit later on.
How could we not talk about food?
I mean, it seems like we talk about food a lot. What's your number one thing? I know this is very difficult for you.
It is very difficult, and you're going to like kick me under the table. I'm honestly just really excited to be... Like, my top thing was going to say, it's like, I feel like it's somewhat of a cop-out, but I'm just so excited to be able to be back in the parks and just be able to soak up that magic. I really am looking forward to a Grand Circle tour. Like, really, really looking forward to a Grand Circle.
On the railroad.
Yep. Grand Circle tour on the railroad. I really want to do it the first day. It'd be ideal if it could be the first thing we do. If not, I understand. But I'm just really looking forward to just being there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's a lot of people's opinions, right?
Yeah.
Especially with the parks being closed, that's what they want to do. So my top thing is actually kind of exactly what you were saying, but different. I'm really excited to finally have the entire DL
that's
Weekly, you know, producers and us all there at the same time. And I'm very excited to be there with Vern and James and, of course, you and me. And I'm excited again to meet some weekly tiers in the parks. I'm sure we'll run into some folks.
Yes.
I really enjoyed doing that for D23. Mm-hmm. It'll be super exciting.
And Touch of Disney.
For James, because he wasn't there for D23 or Touch of Disney. Vern wasn't there for Touch of Disney. But I know that Vern had a really good time meeting people and see, you know, whatever. So I'm very excited to see James finally get to experience that, because James has been part of the podcast longer than Vern had been part of it. But Vern was lucky enough to be able to go before he could.
Yep.
So it's going to be very exciting for that, of course. Along with that, I'm very excited, and I've said this on the show before, for James to be able to experience like Star Wars Galaxy's Edge and do some of that stuff. So I'm very excited. It's almost like being a parent, right? I'm excited to see James's reaction to things. Like, that's what I'm excited for, because I know that he's been talking about being excited to go. So, and again, I'm really excited that, like, all of us will be there together. And this is the first time all of us have been together.
Yep, exactly. Number two for me is I'm looking forward to the new experiences and updates. I feel like I'm cheating, but that's fine. I'm really looking forward to...
You're painting in broad strokes.
I am, because there's so much I'm excited about. So to, like, narrow it down to three, you got to get creative. Mm. So, but I'm really excited for new experiences and new things to Beloved Attraction. So I'm looking at you, Jungle Cruise. I'm really excited. Vern is really excited about the changes to the Jungle Cruise, because as you all know, that is Vern's favorite attraction. And I'm just really interested to see the Jungle Cruise with a more, like, cohesive storyline, instead of it just kind of being not random scenes, but kind of, sort of.
There's no storyline. It's just a bunch of jokes.
New jokes. I'm very excited for new jokes. I'm also really looking forward to seeing Snow White's Enchanted Wish. Mm. And this is a weird one for me to be excited about, but I am really looking forward to seeing Avengers Campus in person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I really want to see it at night.
Specifically Doctor Strange. I'm coming for you.
I know. You have this... I hope that it... Like, I don't feel like it could actually, like, live up to your expectations, because you've been so excited about it.
I don't know what my expectations are. I just think it looks like fun, like... concept. Like,
you've been so excited about this since you saw the first, like, anything about
I know. It just looks so cool.
I just don't know if Disney could ever come up to your expectations, because you've been so excited about it. I've watched the video about it. I feel like you're gonna be like, that's kind of neat, but that's all.
Like, I just like the area. I'm really excited for the area.
At night?
Yeah, especially at night.
Because I think the show only goes during the day.
Yeah.
So we'll have to check out the area at night, which will be good, because I think the Avengers Campus at night is going to be where it's at.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, now I got to think about my second thing. I mean, I'm kind of with you. I'm excited to see the new stuff, right? So, like, this is terrible. Like, we're both picking almost the same thing. I'm excited to see Avengers Campus. We're going to talk about food a little bit later, but I'm really, really excited for Pym Test Kitchen, which is so weird that, like, I'm excited about a food... Because I don't usually get excited about food stuff.
Unless it's the macaron.
That's true. I'm excited, of course, to try to experience Rise of the Resistance again and hopefully have it be a more cohesive... thing. So I'm excited for that. Again, you know, just going back to my first pick of just being back in the parks again and having things. One thing that's kind of interesting is I'm wondering if it's going to feel like when I used to have an annual pass, because the amount of people that used to be in the parks when I had an annual pass in the early 2000s was a lot less than it had been in recent years.
That's true.
So I'm wondering, with the limited capacity, if it's going to feel like those golden years for me, I guess, of when I was there before. So I'm excited to kind of experience the levels of crowd and stuff like that, and also these couple new things.
I know. I keep forgetting that the crowd, like, the capacity limits are still lower. I keep thinking that it's back to, you know, what the Disney normal, but it's not. So that's a good one to be excited about, because I do keep kind of forgetting about that.
I'm hoping that, like, lines for, like, just everything are going to be better.
I think it will. Well, that's what we keep seeing. There are a couple of places that are reporting that the crowds are terrible and the lines are awful and the waits are horrendous. But majority of what I do see, I think those are people maybe either, I don't know, hitting at the wrong times or something. But it seems to me like the majority of weekly tiers and people that we know that have been to the parks with the limited capacities, even after June 15th, when everybody was able to go back, you know, out of state people and all that were able to go back. It does sound like things are flowing really nicely.
Yeah.
Wait times feel like they're non-existent. It feels like light, like a light park day from before. So I think it'll be very nice and very enjoyable.
I feel like if people report that, like, it's calm, they don't get the clicks. So I feel like a lot of the people that are freaking out about the crowds are trying to get people to be like, what does it look like?
But people's expectations might be different too. Because if they went back, like, when the capacity limits were at their lowest, and they're thinking about Disney, how that experience was versus today, then okay, yeah, it is going to be busier feeling. It is going to be more crowded feeling, because yes, there are more people. So I guess it depends on where they're coming from.
Yeah. And I don't know. I still think it's going to be really pleasant.
Oh, I think. Yeah. I 100% think so as well.
And the fireworks are back.
That takes me to my last one. So my final thing that I'm very excited for is I'm very excited to experience Disney entertainment, including fireworks, the bands, all of the different, like,
hopefully the Dapper Dans, maybe.
Yeah, I do think the Five and Dime is back in DCA. They're gonna be fun.
The piano player was back yesterday.
Oh, see, I'm excited for all of the, like, the entertainment and, like, the environment and enhancement that brings to your park day. I guess I could have lumped that in probably to my first one if I really wanted to make my first thing
really
this, like,
overarching
huge umbrella. But yeah, I'm really excited for Disney entertainment.
Oh, now I got to think of a third thing, because I feel like I did like you and I painted with broad strokes when I wanted to. I think the number three, I'm excited for fireworks. I mean, you said fireworks.
That's okay.
I should have let you go second, because then it would have been better. But no,
you can go first for food stuff.
You shared in our Discord, you shared a meme that's been going around. Let me read it directly, because it was really funny. Because
the best 4th of July meme.
It's exactly... Did you put it...
It's in general, yeah.
Oh, God. People talk a lot. Right, yeah. So I saw this before you posted in our Discord, but then I also saw it in the Discord. This is in reference to 4th of July. Today is the day when thousands of Disney fans everywhere watch their local fireworks display and think, meh.
They just do it so well. Like, well, I don't blame the local fireworks at all.
No. My thing is, I just wish our local fireworks... and more local fireworks around the nation would synchronize it with music, because I think that adds so much to it. So I'm really excited to be back to really cool, synchronized fireworks. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen Mixed Magic in person, so that'll be kind of cool. You know, we'll hold on our judgment, I guess, until then. But just being able to, like, experience that, because fireworks are one of, like, my favorite things at Disney. Mm-hmm. And I have some good memories from our D23 trip of fireworks and stuff like that. So very cool. The entertainment stuff you're talking about is good, too. The small things, like the piano player and stuff, I think is going to be great. I really hope that they get some more, like, New Orleans Square, the band there back.
Mm-hmm.
The Dapper Dans, I think, would be great to bring back. So I'm very excited for all of those things as well. So I think you're right. Like, because it's kind of... Disneyland is a lot of pieces that come together,
yes.
And those atmospheric pieces really make it. Mm-hmm. You know, when we went to Disney World in August, the feeling of... a park without all of that stuff was fine. Like, I was excited
it was
we
still
went.
Fun, yeah.
But it was definitely like Disney light, if you will. So I'm excited to have, you know, Disney almost normal. So now we're going to move on to some food. Now we have a ginormous list of food, but
we made this with listeners during our live stream in June.
Yes.
It was a lot of fun.
So I guess I'll start at this point. So I already kind of mentioned this. Pim Test Kitchen, very excited for the Pim Mini Sandwich. This is like I know. So our first day in the park is at Disneyland. The first thing I want to try to eat, although it won't be because we have reservations at Lamplight Lounge now.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping for lunch I can get over for a Pim Mini Sandwich because I really want this. Why are you saying no?
Because we have the meetup.
I'm hoping after the meetup I can get a Pimini sandwich. Maybe I'll get a Pimini sandwich and take it with me to the meetup, and everybody who's at the meetup can see me experience sandwich.
We'll go ride Guardians of the Galaxy, since that's not like your top favorite attraction anyways, and you can go get your Pimini, and we'll meet you at the test kitchen after we bounce around on Guardians for a little while.
Okay, so, something like that, right?
Yep. we'll start with DCA foods that I'm looking for. This is going to sound ridiculous, and I'm really looking forward to the dang Sea Witch.
I know. You've been talking about it as much as I've been talking about the other thing.
I'm really looking forward to the
Sea Witch.
Do you
even remember what was in it?
No. Like, it's a wonderfulness. Like, just wonderfulness is in it. Look at that. It just looks so good and pretty and refreshing. This is something that is on the Lamplight secret menu, but it has raspberry vodka, peach schnapps, blue curacao, and a splash of cranberry juice and Sprite. Yum.
It looks amazing.
You know what? This could be a brunch thing. There's raspberry and there's peach in there and cranberry juice. Those are fruits. That's like brunch.
I don't know why you're worried about this. We're going to be there. It's like our reservation is at like 9:30, which would be like 11:30 central time. So it's what you got to keep talking yourself. Or as community manager Kate says, like it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
We'll just go. Yeah. Or it's an excuse to go back later and have it like in the evening.
It looks beautiful. I love the colors.
Fun. Just so fun.
I hope it tastes as good as it looks. That's what I gotta say.
It sounds like a good blend for me. Maybe a little. It says so. We're looking at the Disney Food Blog's review on it that it's kind of tart, so kind of like a Jolly Rancher type thing. So I don't know. I'm just curious. I'm really curious about it.
$14 though.
Yeah, that's drinks at Disney.
I suppose.
That's why I don't drink at Disneyland. It's or at Disney parks. It's very expensive. So it's not very often that I'll get an adult beverage. But yeah, I'm really looking. It's ridiculous, but I'm really looking forward to that. I am also very much looking forward to the food at Avengers Campus, which is weird because right when Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opened, I don't remember being maybe I was, but I don't remember being super excited about the new foods there. We were kind of excited about Oga's, but now that we've tried, like, I don't know.
Their, like, chip thing wasn't great.
Yeah, I haven't quite found my, like, favorite thing from Oga's yet. I have to keep trying different things on the menu.
The number one thing that I think everybody agrees on with Galaxy's Edge is the Ronto wrap.
Oh, yeah.
Which will be my number two, is I'm looking forward to a Ronto wrap, mm-hmm. because we made those and they were good. We had one in Disney World, and it was amazing. So I feel like this trip, so remember last when we were there for D23, I was really all about the bao buns. Mm-hmm. I feel like I might be making my way back to Galaxy's Edge a couple times and getting some Ronto wraps because it's almost like a hot dog, right? In size wise.
Yeah.
So it's like if you just want kind of like a snack, a Ronto wrap is a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
So very excited for a Ronto wrap again, a Disneyland Ronto wrap instead of a Disney World one this time. But I think that might be my go-to this time just because I liked it so much.
Ronto wraps are, bao bun. I mean, you can't go wrong with a bao bun, a Ronto wrap, or Bengal barbecue beef.
That's true. Those are also on my extended list.
Yeah. For Disneyland, I'm trying to think of, like, new stuff, not stuff that I've had, but I'm looking forward to trying the wedding cake over at Cafe Orleans.
I was going to say that better be your next choice because I feel like
I am very
Sea Witch
excited
and
about
the wedding
this.
Cake.
Yeah, I'm very excited about the wedding cake, and I don't know. I hope that one. I'm a little concerned may not live up to the hype. I'm like thinking that it's going to be super amazing and great because of the theming. I just, of course, it's based on the Haunted Mansion, so I'm really excited. They had this, I believe it was for the Haunted Mansion's 50th, and for whatever reason, I did not try it when I was there when it was available for that, but it's back, and I'm excited to try it now. I didn't try it that trip because they had the blueberry bunk cake doom buggy thing.
Oh, yeah, which you said was good, right?
Amazing.
So
good.
What is it about this that makes you so excited about it?
I don't know. I really think it's the theming. I'm very excited about the theming. And have you had a slice of Disney cake that did you wrong?
No. The Their Disney cakes have been amazing. I really liked what was it? The Electrical Parade one that was at Plaza Inn when we were there was really good.
Yep.
I'm sad that I never got to try the Pixar one because the coloring just made it look appealing. This one also looks really good. It looks like it's got a good amount of cream and stuff in it, which it's really important to get the ratio right because sometimes the ratio of cream to cake is off. This looks good. We'll have to share one of these, or you can get one and I'll get one, something. Because I know...
You couldn't see the look on his face. He was hoping that I wasn't going to come, like, attack him when he's like, share. Or you could have your own.
Well, because we talked about this. Because what was it that we were talking about? Oh, the panini. I said, I'm getting my own panini.
Yeah. I'm like, we'll just share. We can share the chicken, the not so little chicken. He's like, no. I'm like, okay.
On my top list, but I'm also looking forward to the shawarma.
I feel just like Avengers we're going to be eating a lot of Avenger Campus food while we're there. For me, I don't know what it is, but there's not as many food items in DCA that I get very excited about. Disneyland, I feel overwhelmed with food choices because there's so many tasty things there. But I don't have that same feeling with DCA. I don't know why.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that the Pim Nini, the Pim Test Kitchen goodies, the shawarma, I'm hoping that the food items in Avengers Campus are as tasty as I'm hearing and I'm hoping.
Are we going to be like these vloggers and are we going to literally order like everything and just sit down at a table with like everything they offer?
I don't think not everything, no. Because there was a couple of things that didn't really interest
me. Is Vern preparing his stomach for all the food we're going to pot off on him?
Probably.
So yeah. Producer Vern, just so you guys know, we've mentioned on the podcast before, but I want to mention it here too, is what happens is Teresa and I both, I think, suffer from this. Our eyes are bigger than our stomach and we want to try a lot of things. And we... At least when we were there for D23, we knew that we wanted to try a bunch of stuff, so we'd have a few bites and then be like, I really want to finish this, but I know that I also want to try whatever else.
Other thing.
So we just hand it to Vern, and Vern is more than happy. James was even saying this, because James was talking about some food, and he's like, Vern is not going to have to spend any money on food, because all of us are going to buy stuff and just give it to him.
I do think that we're going to end up doing a lot of sharing of stuff, because I think there's a lot of stuff that we're all interested in trying, which is good.
Back off my Pimmini sandwich, though.
Minus the Pimmini.
And your wedding cake.
No, I'll probably share the wedding cake. The Disney cake slices are...
This one's massive, they said.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a very, very big portion, in my opinion. So, yeah.
My like, third one, I guess, I want to try to beat you to this one, is I'm actually really excited to go to Trader Sam's. Oh. I want to get inside, because I saw one of our supporters, Sammy was there, I think, wasn't it? And she was saying that she got there and got on this, like, wait list for, like, a couple hours to get inside. Because inside has all the interactive elements. Yep. And we didn't get to experience that because we had our meetup there on the outside.
Yep.
So I want to go see the inside. But I heard not only is it just, like, really popular, the thing is it's not a very big space, the inside. Right. So only a few people, even in best of times, fits in there. Mm-hmm. But I really want to experience it.
Yeah, I'm excited. That was going to be my bonus because it's outside of the parks. That was my bonus. I think... I don't know. This is going to sounds kind of ridiculous, and it's so, like, not very exciting. But for some reason, I'm really, really wanting to try the cheddar garlic bagel twists at Maurice's Treats.
They I didn't try those last time, but I have been wanting
yummy. They just sound so... I think every time that I go, like, I'm back by it or I think about it, I'm not hungry. So that's why I never end up getting them. I am very excited to also get another boysen apple freeze while we're at Maurice's Treats, which is something
you've had that before.
Yep, I had that during the Oogie Boogie trip, and it was good. It was very, very refreshing.
I'm just looking at some pictures of the Trader Sam's bar. Yeah, because there's a few little tables and, like, a bar space. It might be something we have to go to early.
I think we looked at it, and then, like, the capacity is at, like, 60 people. It's not very large. Like, it's much,
but they have a lot of cool interactive things that I'd really like to see.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm 100% looking forward to Trader Sam's.
It's like the restaurant that the Tiki Room was going to be, but in a bar, not inside of Disneyland. Vern, I feel like, would love to work at this bar.
Oh, yes. The hard thing with Trader Sam's, though, is they have so many fun themed drinks. It's going to be really hard to choose.
The one that has, like, the little Grogu drink, right? The little Baby Yoda drink.
I don't remember if that was there, if that was one of the hotels, but... Yeah, I don't remember that now, because that may have been over somewhere in the Grand Californian.
Maybe.
I don't remember. The other thing that I'm looking forward to, which I don't think I've talked to you about, and who knows if we'll have time or not, I want to try the taqueria of Tortilla Joe's. We've done the formal dining experience, seating inside and having, like, the full Tortilla Joe's experience. But for some reason, I really want to try the walk-up. Because it's a slightly different menu, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's tacos and nachos.
Yeah, it's like tacos. Yeah, I think they might have a burrito. It's what you would get from, like, a food truck almost.
Maybe for our meetup, we were thinking Earl of Sandwich. Maybe I'll go over and get...
That's a good idea. Get that on the way over.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Me carrying my Pimmini sandwich.
We're gonna need a tray. And just, like,
I'm gonna be like those people we talked about.
Full of food. Yeah. Like, there's lots of people at Touch of Disney that, like, didn't, I don't know, they didn't get everything tried that they wanted to try, or all of their dining things came up at the same, I don't know what it was, but we saw quite a few people leaving with trays of food from Touch of Disney. And I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast or not, but we were at World of Disney after Touch of Disney the second night. And one of those people had their tray of goodies in World of Disney with them. So it's kind of become a joke of
ridiculous.
The tray of food. Yeah. Yeah. I just feel bad because, like, I don't know how good that some of that stuff would have been after it had been carried around for a little while and cooled off. But hopefully it was still tasty for them.
So the big thing, as this episode posts, we're only a couple days away from actually being in the park. Mm-hmm. So we do have a meetup, which will be on Sunday, July 18th at 1 p.m. in the seating area that's in front of the old AMC theaters.
Yeah, so it kind of, I guess the best way to describe it, if you don't know where the AMC theater was, is it's...
Basically, if you go all the way to the end of downtown Disney towards the hotel...
Next to Earl of Sandwich is the other place, too.
It's like the last place you bump into before you go out of the security.
Yep. Big seating area, so lots of space for weekly tiers to come and gather. Like Tag said, we will be there 1 p.m. on Sunday, July 18th.
Only for about an hour.
Yep. Hour, maybe 2 hours, and then we're head back into the parks to continue to have fun. So, yeah.
We'll have some buttons and some goodies. Please come see us. We're doing it in downtown Disney, so you guys can come and not have to have tickets to go to the park. So that's going to be very exciting. We hope to see as many of you there as possible. And if we've met you before, seeing you again would be great. If we have not met you, we're looking forward to meeting you. If there's anything that you think we should try for food or anything, any experience or anything at Disneyland that you're excited about, shoot us an email, feedback@dlweekly.net.
I don't know how I forgot this, but I forgot. I don't think it's going to happen.
Uh-oh.
But I'm going to at least try and ask to see if we can use the back entrance to the Haunted Mansion.
Oh, yeah. We should
That's
try.
Another thing that, like, I'm really excited
for. We should try multiple
for.
Times. If we get a no, try it again
later. I really
later.
Don't know if that one's going to happen or not, but I really hope so.
It would be cool. So if you have any recommendations of stuff that we should try, food-wise or otherwise, let us know, drinks even, let us know. Feedback@dlweekly.net. We will be there again. We'll be there from the 17th to the 21st, as long as you message us before then. And the way we're doing it is we're doing Disneyland, DCA, Disneyland, DCA, Disneyland. So you can figure that stuff out. If you do see us on Saturday or Sunday, our community manager, Kate's going to be hanging out with us, which will be super exciting. And she gets to do a lot of things that she normally can't do because her daughter won't be with her. And so she can ride some of the roller coasters and stuff.
Yep.
So that's going to be very exciting. If you do see us in the parks, we'd be happy to ride an attraction with you.
Yeah, come say hi for sure. For sure.
Psst. Avast there. It'd be too late to alter course, mateys. And there be trivia questions lurking in every cove, waiting to be answered. Listen close and keep your ruddy Disney knowledge handy. That be the best way to answer correctly. And mark well me words, mateys. Dead men tell no tales. You come seeking questions and long-lost Disney information, eh? Sure, you come to the proper place. But keep a weather eye open, mates. And hold on tight with both hands, if you please. There be squalls ahead. And James and Vern waiting for them what don't answer correctly.
Welcome to Trivia Land with producer Vern, where I'm going to be asking them 4 questions plus a bonus question, and we're going to see how they do with their knowledge of Disneyland. How you feeling tonight, Tag and Teresa? You think you've got the knowledge?
You know, it's always a coin flip. You never know. Some days we do really great, and sometimes it's just not good.
Well, and sometimes it's just we did really great on half the questions and totally flopped on the other ones.
That is true.
Very true. Well, let's see how you do. Tonight we're going to mix it up with some listener-submitted questions and some stuff that James and I have come up with. So, your first question, submitted by listener Matthew J., what was the last train station to be built on the Disneyland Railroad?
The Toontown.
Bonus, what was the original name?
It was the Fantasyland Station.
Yep, it was the Toontown Station.
But it is now Toontown Depot.
Oh, yeah, Depot, yes.
Because the reason I know this so well is I have a Disneyland Railroad poster in our bathroom at home with all my other Disneyland posters. And I was looking at it the other day, and it said, with stops at Main Street, Frontierland, and Tomorrowland.
There you go.
You know, it's really crazy.
Wait a minute. You said Frontierland?
Frontierland.
So then
it was before New Orleans Square was there. So the train station, if you're standing at the New Orleans Square Depot, and you look across the tracks, that building used to be on this side of the tracks where you would wait to get on.
Yeah. I knew that. But
also, when the park first opened, trains would start and stop at their depot, and so, like, if you got on a main street, it would go around, there was a separate track, and it would pass the other stations as it went past them and come back. So if you got on at Frontierland, it would go all the way around back to Frontierland.
Interesting.
Yeah. It didn't stay that way for very long, but that's how it was in the beginning.
Always a Grand Circle tour.
Which is why Main Street Station still has it. Has that little spur track in the front where the little dilly hopper is.
Mm-hmm.
So your final answer is the last train station to be built was the Fantasyland Station, and it's now called Toontown.
Yep. Toontown Depot.
Okay.
Okay. Or Mickey's Toontown Depot, maybe. If they're getting really...
Your second question, submitted by listener Donna S. How tall is the Matterhorn attraction in feet?
I don't know why, but in my head, I want to say 157 feet. I don't know why.
That sounds right. That's funny, because I was thinking like 169.
Ooh. I know that it's like 1 foot below what they would need to put a red dot on it, like the light for the...
Yeah, which I don't know what that would be.
So I don't know either.
159 or like 154, like...
Maybe.
I'm going to go with 154.
Okay.
Okay.
69 stuck in my head because...
And are those your final answers?
That it opened. Yes.
The year was 59.
Oh, 59. Yes, yes, yes.
All right. And your third regular round question. Music from what movies are featured in Mickey and the Magical Map?
Oh my gosh. All sorts of music. Okay, we've got Pocahontas.
Princess and the Frog.
Yes, Princess and the Frog. Tangled. We also have Mulan.
Jungle Book.
Yes, Jungle Book.
I was just watching a video of Mickey and the Magical Map, funny enough. Fantasia.
I was going to say, I don't know. I was just trying to think. Do they have it in the musical, though?
Well, they have the brooms come out at one point, so I feel like they would. I just watched a video of this. That's why I remember. And then, of course, they had, like, just the theme for Mickey and the Magical Map.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's it. So, what do we say? Oh, The Little Mermaid.
Little Mermaid. Yep.
Miss Sebastian solo.
And is that your final answer?
Final answer.
Alrighty.
Hold on. Yes.
I haven't seen this since we were there for D23. It was the last time I saw it, so.
Well, and we were distracted by the awesome.
Yes. The people doing the sign language.
They were amazing.
They were.
And your fourth and final regular round question, submitted by listener Jill M. Which Imagineer designed fresh sets and a facade inspired by Mary Blair's sketches for It's a Small World when it moved to Disneyland?
Oh, why can't I? I can picture Walt having a conversation with the Imagineer about the facade.
Male or female?
Male. And I cannot remember his name.
It's not Mark Davis. It's not...
It's either Mark Davis or Marty Sklar. I can't remember now who it was. I can see the conversation. I can see the facade, but I can't make the face clear of the Imagineer.
I'll say Mark Davis because that was what I.
I know Alice did the inside. Yeah. We'll go with Mark Davis.
And is that your final answer?
I mean,
I'm gonna kick myself if it was Mars Galore.
And for your bonus tonight, the Ghost Host was originally going to take a physical form. Nods to the intended character can be seen throughout the attraction. Who was going to be the said narrator?
It was the Raven.
The Raven.
Because he's on the...
he's everywhere.
Well, he's on the casket that's getting lifted up. Yep. Then he's on the area as you go down into the graveyard. He's above the graveyard as you're leaving.
He's hanging out with Madame Leota.
Oh, yeah, you're right. On the chair, yep.
I don't think he's in.
Is he in the ballroom?
Ballroom that I've spotted.
Maybe that's why he says. Maybe that's why he leaves at that point. Because right as you get to the ballroom, he says, "I'll see you all a little later."
Oh yeah, that would make sense.
Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Do you think you got the right answers? Keep listening after the discussion topic to find out.
This week for our discussion topic, we're having a special guest on that I have talked about now on the podcast a couple times and on a couple of our streams because his website has actually got us a couple dining reservations that I really wanted to get. So please welcome to the show Dustin, who is co-founder of mousedining.com. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. I'm excited.
We are too. So I was so glad to find your site. I know I've said this before, but I had used when Teresa and I went to Disney World. We had used another website that does similar to what your site does, but that site didn't do anything for Disneyland. So I went searching around and I came across yours and was able to use it. So I'm really excited to talk about how you got involved with it and came up with it and all the fun stuff with that. But let's go through our normal normal intro questions first.
So, Dustin, can you just give us as brief or as long as you'd like? Let's hear your Disney story. So how did you kind of fall in love with Disney, the company, either the parks, the movies, the brand? What's your history with it?
So I'm going to age myself here, but I grew up in that key era where it was like Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Lion King, just back to back to back, like amazing movies. And during that time, I was young and impressionable, and I thought I was going to be an animator at Disney. And at the time, I lived up closer to the West Coast, and so Disneyland is my original home. Today, I'm in Georgia, and Disney World has kind of taken that coveted spot in my heart. But when we did travel, we took a trip back to Orlando when I was young, and I remember at the time, I think it was MGM Studios, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would go there and I would sit and watch the animators draw, and I could have stayed there all day.
My parents
were hugging at me, and you know, fast forward maybe 8-10 years, and then Pixar arose on the scene. And then at that point I was like, I'm going to be a 3D animator. I'm going to animate for Pixar. And then my career just took me down a full left brain path of analytics and software and a bunch of other fun things along the way. But that creative side was always my core, and it still is at my core, but my career has just led me down a very analytical, data-driven path. So my career today doing Mouse Dining is allows me to exercise some of that creativity now and again, but how I got here was very left brain. So,
interesting.
But that's how I fell in love with Disney.
Wow. Yeah. Teresa loves the Animation Academy. And I don't remember which part of Evan's episodes, I don't remember if it was part one or part two, but he talked about how they also liked to go and sit and do that. So, I mean, I think we're finding a whole group of animation lovers here.
It's, you know, I think it's such a cool thing. It's something, I feel like I talk about it all the time, but it's something that you wouldn't expect to find in a park, that I think it's very special that it's now part of the parks, that you can go to DCA and take an animation class, or you could just sit there and watch them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, same thing. I think it's now an Animal Kingdom for Walt Disney World, but you can go do these animation classes. I think that is so cool. No, you don't get to go other places. You don't go to Six Flags and get to do an experience like that, you know? So I think it's just so cool.
Yeah,
right.
Next, we need a Pixar one to teach us how to do the computer animation stuff.
They'd give everybody like a tablet or something. Yeah. I feel like that would take a little bit longer.
Yeah, it would. It'd be like a day long class. Yeah, instead of just
it'd be cool though.
It would.
When you go to Disneyland, now you know if you haven't been there for a while, it could be the Magic Kingdom. On your first day of a visit or a trip, which way do you go? Do you go left towards Adventureland? Do you go straight through to Fantasyland? Do you go right towards Tomorrowland? What's kind of your attack plan in the morning?
Ooh, so we were there for, was it Touch of Disney?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. My wife and I went for that event, and we covered that very lightly, but we were there and enjoyed that. And I'm just trying to think back. Like, I think my natural, my natural instinct is to just go left. And so we go to Adventureland, and then, you know, I think we probably stop for a Dole Whip, like in and out and come back and you know, five different times throughout the day, but I think Adventureland.
Yeah.
Adventureland is where it's at, man. We usually do Adventureland as well.
It's good.
The thing is with Disneyland, and I hate to say it, but the thing with Disneyland is, at least in my opinion, I know that other people have other opinions, but the bulk of all the stuff that, like, is really popular is on that west side of the park. You know,
I agree.
Tomorrowland, you've got Space Mountain, and you got Space Mountain. And you got, like, the Matterhorn, which some people like, but some people don't. But I don't feel like the Matterhorn is, like, a super, like, we haven't even, I don't think anybody, has anybody ever said that their favorite attraction's been the Matterhorn?
Yeah, I think we've had a couple favorites for Matterhorn.
I think that would be my wife's. I think Emily would say Matterhorn is her favorite.
Yeah.
Even with as painful as it is, everybody says it's so painful.
I think it's gotten better. I mean, I don't know how long ago they upgraded the bobsleds there, but those were an improvement over what I recall as a kid.
Sure. Yeah.
They are different, that's for sure. The nice thing about Walt Disney World and the Magic Kingdom is you do have the Carousel of Progress you have the People Mover. So you've got a couple more things going for your Tomorrowland than we've got going for ours.
I
think I do Adventureland and then I do like Pirates and then that bumps you right back into like Big Thunder and Splash and left.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Definitely left.
Yeah. So we're going to make you choose, which is sometimes very hard to do, but what is your favorite attraction? Even though this is a Disneyland podcast, you can pick an attraction from any of the parks.
You know, I like the attractions. I'm kind of a people watcher, and I kind of just like the ambiance of being there. And so really, my favorite thing lately is just Galaxy's Edge and Batuu. Just hanging out there. The Rise of the Resistance was great. The Millennium Falcon was great. But just being in that environment is awesome for me.
Are you a big Star Wars fan?
Yes, I am. I am a big Star Wars fan, but there are other movies and other things I am a bigger fan of.
Sure.
But you can lump me into the I like Star Wars. Yeah.
Now, have you made a lightsaber at Savvy's yet, or is that not so? You have.
I have. It's in my closet. I've got it here.
That's such a cool experience.
It is.
You know, I was just thinking of all the, like, for people watching, I never thought, usually I think, like, Main Street or sitting on the hub for people watching, but I bet people watching in Batuu is pretty darn awesome because you get to see a lot of people walking into that land and experiencing it for the first time, so you get to see, like, the, like, true reactions of total strangers.
And the characters.
Like, noticing the land.
Because you get, like, the First Order troopers and Kylo Ren walking around and That's Chewbacca.
Yeah, I like a lot of the ambiance of just, like, it feels like they do a really good job of making it feel like you're in a living, working world where people have things that they're doing and places they're going, and it's great.
I really liked, when we were waiting in line for Oga's, I really liked the sound of, like, ships flying overhead and stuff.
Yeah.
It definitely added to the ambiance, like you're saying, that you're actually in the little spaceport, you know, in the middle of nowhere. So... mousedining.com. How did this come about? How did you come up with the idea to start this?
Funny you ask. I'm just gonna say it, and my wife's gonna love me for it. It was her idea.
Oh,
it was Emily's idea, and she doesn't get credit for that, but she kind of gives me a bad time because I, you know, I work in it. I do it all day. And she just kind of always was like, it was my idea. So I'm giving
now,
you credit.
The word is out. We all know.
Yeah.
Because of Emily. Yeah.
So what I tell others is my family are all, I mean, we grew up going to Disneyland fairly frequently. And then my brother moved over to the East Coast and he kind of made Georgia his home and they'd go down to Disney World frequently. I moved out here to be with him and work with him and what he did. But as part of that, our families would get together frequently and we'd go down to Walt Disney World. And one of the first trips we took about seven, eight years ago, was it was during a Star Wars weekend. And we really wanted to dine at the Star Wars Hollywood and Vine event where Mickey and Goofy and Donald were all dressed up in Star Wars attire. And that was a blast. We were really looking forward to that. Well, my wife and my sister-in-law, they were planning this whole thing, and they were so excited to surprise my brother and I, who both of us are Star Wars fans, that they were going to score dining reservations at this place. And just they were spending all day on the computer. They were spending all day on the phone trying to get dining reservations to Hollywood and Vine. And then, actually, my wife's going to correct me. We'll have to back up. It was actually Be Our Guest.
Oh, okay.
So during that same trip, I had a young daughter at the time. We wanted to take her to Be Our Guest.
That's
like a hard ticket.
Yeah.
So it was Be Our Guest. And so she will correct me on that. Honey, I'm sorry. I fixed myself before I went too far. And so Be Our Guest is where we were trying to get into, and we could not. We had scored the reservations for the Hollywood and Vine Star Wars event, and it was Be Our Guest that we were still struggling with. And again, they were spending absurd amounts of time on the internet and on the phone calling, trying to get reservations just weeks before our trip. And my wife turned to my brother and my sister-in-law and I and just said, I just really wish somebody would just, when an opening came up, that I could, my name could be on a list, and they would just call me and say, hey, there's an opening. Do you want it? Or, you know, heaven forbid they text me or do something else to notify me. And my brother, software engineer, looked at her and was like, they don't do that yet? And he's like, no, we've been on the phone. We've been on the internet trying to do all this. And he said, well, let me have a look. And I recall it being like 45 minutes later, he had a working prototype of Matt.
Wow. Holy cow.
Emily, my wife, will tell you it was like a couple days. But I really strongly believe later that evening, he was like, well, I think I got it all set up. So if you get a text from this number, like, you know, that's how I set it up. So look for that.
My gosh.
We had come home either that night or a couple nights later, and my wife's phone buzzed in the middle of the night, probably at 1 or 2 in the morning. And she's like, oh, and so she went on Disney's website, and, you know, she's hitting me in the bed. And she's like, I got it. And so that was just like, wow, this thing works. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And we used that for privately for probably a year and a half.
That's just awesome.
Our family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some friends when we knew they were going, we mm-hmm. used that about a year and a half. So I led into this, but my brother has a software company, and just, we had some downtime. We had some developers a year and a half later, and it was just always kind of something we were like, we should probably turn this into a tool and build it. And ultimately, that's how it got built and how it became public.
That's amazing. what a like beginning story.
Well, that's like the best thing. That's one of the main reasons I want to do more with programming, because like I'm a big IT nerd, and like I do a lot of like networking stuff, but programming has always been a challenge for me. But like the fact that you could have an idea and then just, you know, whether it's 45 minutes or a couple days, like, I have this tool now that makes my life so much better.
Yeah,
like, you could
crazy.
Just, if you can't find it out there, you could just make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I give him 100% credit for the creation of it, because he's the programming genius, and I would call him a serial entrepreneur, and he's done this multiple times with other businesses, but that's part of the reason why I moved out here to be with him, is he had built a company big and needed to put somebody in charge of it so he could go build another one.
That's crazy.
So I had expressed interest and came out here and did that. And we've done it a few times since together. So
wow. That's awesome.
That's so crazy. So then, right, so you've got this idea. You've kind of then fledged it out and made it a thing, and you're creating it for the public. So how did you decide on what to all include with mousedining.com? I'm looking at the website right now. It looks like, you know, the main thing, of course, is snagging those coveted reservations. But we've also got like a blog and some other stuff going on. So what made you pull together everything that became the website?
That's a great question. And it's kind of a long answer, because it's actually kind of an interesting story how it all happened. So
we'd love to hear it.
I'll kind of continue where I left off in launching the site. So we launched the site probably about 2014, if I remember my dates. But there were already about 4 other sites doing this.
Sure.
Touring Plans has been doing it the whole time. And there were 3, maybe 4 others that had appeared at that time that were helping people get dining reservations at Disney together, and they got shut down. They got shut down, and we had just had developers build our version of it.
And you're like, oh no.
Oh no. Like, what do we do now? And so literally we pushed it live and just did a silent launch and just said, okay, let's go back to working on other things. We used it. We told some friends about it. There were some people in the area whose family of employees we had that were taking trips, and we said, yeah, that's fine, just go use it. And we took away, it's important, we took away all billing at that point. We were like, we're not charging for this, we're just put it
trying
up
to really place. Be clear to Disney. There is no financial gain here. It's just trying to help people.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. So we let it go. And I, you know, I had other projects I just moved on to. And fast forward 12, 14 months, and I'm going through my credit card statement. And I'm like, what is this, like, $800 charge from Twilio? What is that? And Twilio is a texting service provider. They send emails and text messages. And I'm like, we don't have anything that uses Twilio. Like, and so I had to dig into it, and I dug into it, and lo and behold, it was Mouse Dining. I'm like, how is Mouse Dining sending out that many messages? And at that point, like, I kind of had to do a 180 and just, like, this thing had exploded overnight, or over 12 months, just word of mouth just spread like wildfire, and we had thousands of people using it.
That's like, crazy.
Oh, okay. We're losing about $1,000 a month on this. Let's maybe figure out what we can do to not just throw money away.
Right.
So that triggered my kind of, you know, one, it got my attention, was like, hey, you've got to pay attention to this. Two, it put me in, this was the first time I actually sent an email out to Mouse Dining subscribers or users and just said, I laid it out for them. I'm like, guys, this thing's costing me a lot of money. I don't know what to do with it. I'm considering shutting it down. Is it helpful? Do you love it? What would you have me do? Otherwise, I've got to charge for it. Mm-hmm. And unanimously, everybody was like, don't take it away. Like, we'll pay for it. Like, we love this thing. And so I'm like, okay, well, here are some ideas I have of how I can make this work. And I investigated advertising and anything to make, other than making people charge for it. I contacted even a few people who may want to sponsor it, or I did everything I could to try and just, I don't want to have people pay for this because it can go away at any time. And we don't know the longevity of it. I just don't want to lose any more money. Frankly.
Right. Right.
And that email and that survey really kind of started I don't want to call it a trend. It started a behavior in me that every time, like, I ran into a problem, I would just ask the users and say, what else do you need? What else? What do you like? What do you not like? What can we change? And so over the 5 or so years that this has been running since, I've just made that part of my style of ownership and management, is just, here's a few ideas we have. Let me put it out to the users and see what they have to say.
So, I think that's super smart.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of shaped who we are. But I tell people today, we more or less operated Mouse Dining as a nonprofit for 5 years up until about December of 2020.
Oh, wow.
So I just continued to struggle to, like, users would grow so fast. I struggled to find enough money to continue paying for it.
Right.
And so over time, like, I added advertising. I maybe found a sponsor here or there. I've tried putting products in front of our users to get them to pay, and I'll get a commission through an affiliate program. I've tried all kinds of things to keep the service free, and it would just keep, expenses would keep climbing with the revenue. It was a never ending battle. And so, and again, I went back to the users. I said, guys, I gotta charge for this. I'm like, it's going to be a nominal fee. We'll figure it out. But the texting was really what was killing us. And we had gone through iterations. We price shopped all of the texting providers, and we found the cheapest one. And I had done everything to cut costs, and I've really attacked it from every angle until finally I was like, I've got to charge for this.
Yep.
So we went down that path, and it again kind of struggled. So what would happen is we'd get a lot of users sign up, and they were primarily travel agents. But then we still had all these free users that were receiving text messages. And so all that expense would just eat away at any money the travel agents were paying us because they were using it in more volume than anybody else.
Sure, yeah.
That's so crazy.
December 2020, I gave everybody about 60 days notice and said, guys, texting is going away for free users. I can't afford to do it anymore. And that's really changed the entire business from that point, because now I actually have some profit that I can invest back into infrastructure, into people, into new technology, new services, and branch out from just dining alerts.
So, you know, I think that's smart, because really, like, what's a text message versus an email? It's both, they're both coming to the same device. So, yep. You know, that's not, shouldn't be too big of an issue for people
didn't
to have to
matter
switch.
To me. I got say, the yeah, email got right the away email. And got in. So I think it really just matters is, you know, I feel like, you know, some people, and I've seen lots of people online, I'm very attached to my email. So my email comes in, I see it right away. I don't know if this is accurate for me to say this, Teresa, but I feel like you're not as attached to your email. Like, you don't see emails as soon as they come in.
No.
Yeah, so I see emails as soon as they come in. I run my own IT business. That's a way that customers contact me. I have to be able to, like, see it right away. And so I was actually sitting playing a board game with James, and I looked at my watch, and this email came in and said, there's a reservation available. And I was like, I'm sorry. I know what we're doing here, but this is very time sensitive. And I hopped right on. Yeah.
What you need to do.
So, I mean, a text, people usually will respond to text faster because, again, a lot of people, I get so much spam and I don't check my email, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we know somebody who, like, never checks their email. But I don't know. I don't know how that works. But I've always had to check the email. So the email thing for the free service I thought was great.
Yeah.
I didn't need a text alert. So I'm glad that it helps keep the service going because that I'm not, you know, that it didn't cost anything or whatever.
This is such a great service, though, because myself, everybody listening, I'm sure, has been wanting these coveted dining reservations, especially now with Disneyland, all of these different places opening up. We did have capacity limitations, so it was even harder to get these reservations. And there's been, I've heard, you know, and I've been there, lots of frustration with sitting in the, you know, little virtual waiting rooms or whatever to then just have it not be there. So this is such a unique and, like, great product, because you can just, you can be, like, in that quote-unquote virtual waiting room type situation, but not actually have to be staring at your screen waiting for something to happen and just get a notification. So I think this is a fantastic service.
Well, it's like your wife said, can't I just get on a paper wait list somewhere, and when Disney gets to me, like, call me and be like, hey, we have an opening, instead of, because it takes so much man hours, especially like you were saying that she was calling and all this other stuff. It's like, how much money is Disney spending fielding all of these calls? And during COVID, it was difficult because the wait times were so much longer. And of course, you probably had staff working remotely and less staff working. And you would think that Disney would just do something like this themselves instead of, I mean, I don't want your business to
They've
go away. I'm just saying, like,
things.
It seems
that's
like
always
Disney.
A risk, right? That's the risk that I've been aware of since day one because of how we kind of started the business and saw what happened to others. I'm very keenly aware of that. And for that very reason, I'm not quick and eager to hire others because honestly, Disney could come up with a better solution and make our service obsolete. I'm very conservative on that front, and I'm just now looking at bringing a few people on, and even still, it makes me nervous. But our goal is to branch out into other aspects of Disney planning and Disney travel, so that we're not 100% all of our eggs in that basket.
Sure.
So that if that goes away, we've got nothing.
Yeah, you're not having to be like, sorry, folks, I know we just hired you.
I can't get another revenue stream fast enough, really, because that once I diversify our revenue away from just dining alerts, I'll be a lot more confident in building a team and making a lot more things.
So you probably see some trends as customers of yours and users of your service use your service. Since the parks have reopened, is there a particular hot ticket that everybody's trying to get or anything like that? Or have you seen anything like that? Or is it just kind of across the board, everybody wants everything?
Honestly, it is kind of across the board, everybody wants everything. I will say there has never been a time in our 6 or 7 years that we've been watching this where there is more demand for so little supply. The supply and demand is way out of balance right now, which drove up huge demand for our service beginning in about March. And we exploded, and I'm sure some of our competitors exploded in March. And now it's just, is it going to stick? Is it going to stay? Is Disney going to change something when they open up capacity to 100%, which I understand they're, have they announced that, or are they getting close to
it? Haven't announced it yet, but they're ratcheting up at Disneyland. Yeah,
I think maybe it was your podcast I heard it on. They're ramping it up, and they're increasing capacity indoors and in restaurants, but it's still not 100%. But it will be 100% probably in the next 2 or 3 months. And I think at this point, services like Mouse Dining have become almost necessary. Or people have needed them for over a year now.
Yeah.
And I think that'll just keep the demand of them going. Because honestly, the more people that use those and get dining reservations faster makes it more difficult for anybody else who's not using a service like Mouse Dining. And again, I'm keenly aware of that. I know what's going on, and I know Disney probably doesn't like that fact. But I've always tried to play extremely nice with Disney, and I mean, the best scenario that can walk out of this is Disney comes to Mouse Dining and says, hey, can we use what you've built and just make that available for everybody? That would be fantastic.
I mean, Disney does this stuff to themselves, though. You know, like, they come up with these processes and procedures, you know, dining reservations and Fast Pass and, like, all these things that make people have to plan more ahead. Because I remember when I was a kid, you just would go to the park and you'd walk up to, you know, the Blue Bayou and be like, hey, can I put my name down for dinner tonight? Like, there wasn't months in advance of planning all this.
It kind of makes sense, though, because think of the travelers that it's either their once-a-year trip or maybe it's once-in-a-lifetime kind of a trip. And, you know, you're only going to be there for a limited time, so you kind of have to secure your spot because that might be the one chance you have for it. So it makes sense, but...
And having known both parks, so I grew up with California and then I grew up with Florida. Mm-hmm. Florida has had this problem for a while with maybe a dozen restaurants. They were, you know, Be Our Guest, or not, well, Be Our Guest from day one since it opened, but Cinderella's Royal Table, Ohana, all of those were just kind of the, if you're going to Walt Disney World, you have to do breakfast at Chef Mickey. You have to do breakfast at Ohana. You have to go to Be Our Guest because it's the newest restaurant for a little while. Like, all of those things became must-do things when just food, I believe, across the country was all lifted up together because of all these cooking shows. And, and Vegas is, you know, turned into a dining spot that's incredible. Like, food, like, we just enjoy our food a whole lot more in the last 10, 15 years than we did prior. And so it's part of it's an experience, and Disney's happy to provide those experiences, and more people are just kind of engaging in that. And Walt Disney World, it's been a problem for a long time, but same with you. Blue Bayou is amazing. It's my favorite restaurant. It was my favorite restaurant for a long time, but now that you can get the Monte Cristo sandwich the place across the street.
Yep, you can get it at Cafe Orleans. That. You know what? Cafe it's in DCA now, too.
At the Smoke Jumpers.
We were there for Touch of Disney.
Yeah, they kept it there. It's still at Smoke Jumpers. But so you get it three places now.
Monte Cristo sandwich fan till the day I die.
What's funny is, so I'm not a ham fan. Like, everybody in my family knows I'm not like a ham guy. But everybody kept talking about this Monte Cristo, and so I'm like, I have to try it. And then when Touch of Disney had like the smaller portion and we were sharing I was like, I'll try it. It was so good. I'm with you. I'm there. I feel like it's something that I have to get at least once now when I go to the show, to the parks. I will say also the bao buns. I still love the bao buns from the Tropical Hideaway were also very good.
Here's a question for you. So if I sign up for one of these alerts, is it like a wait list? How, like, if Tag and I both are trying to get the same reservation, so say we both want, we'll do Blue Bayou for 5 p.m. on July 17th. If we both sign up for Blue Bayou reservations on the 17th, how does the system know? How do I want to say
or
this?
Does the system know?
Does the system. I guess I want to say, does everybody that signed up for that day and that place all get the pings? Or is there some sort of like tiered system like, oh, Teresa, you signed up for the request first? You know, how does that work?
So this is something we need to explore further. But currently, the way the service works is anybody with that same alert will be notified.
Sure.
And, you know, that has brought up the question in the past from some users. Well, how do I know I got it before somebody else? And my answer to that is this all happens in milliseconds.
Yes. Yeah.
You are all being notified within fractions of a second. And that's not going to make or break the difference who's going to get a dining room.
You're the one who's got to be quick.
Well, like, and you know, really,
the user's got to be the one on there.
Well, and it's the same thing if you're just going to try and do it on your own and you just happen to catch it. You know, did you click the reserve button before someone else got that spot or whatever? It's just, you know, that's just how the game is played.
Yeah.
So first come, I do first all serve. Of our customer service. I'm a one man show. I see it all. And that is the number one complaint, is everybody appears to just click that link immediately and there's no delay ever. And so they come to me saying, how can this be? I'm clicking this immediately when I get it.
Yeah.
And how could somebody have beaten me? And I actually just created a YouTube video that published, I think, earlier this morning that answers that question. But the TLDR of that is, even though our system triggers the alerts to be sent at that point, once it's off our system, it's in the hands of your cell phone carrier and your email provider.
Sure, yeah.
And email is handled uniquely, in that most of your mobile devices, laptops, are all trying to conserve battery. They operate on a fetch system, which the mail is delivered to your mail server out in the cloud, and periodically every 5, 10, 30 minutes, your device will go fetch mail from the mail server. That inherently has a delay built into it,
mm-hmm.
unless you have a push email provider. And so that's the problem with email, and that's why people often say email is slower, or they don't get to it fast enough. They might get to it fast, but it's been sitting on the email server for 7 minutes.
Well, not to mention the internet sometimes is slow. Like, your email may go through a bunch of different servers. One server could be bogged down, and then it ends up in a queue for a little while. Then, you know, again, things are milliseconds, but still time matters. So, you know, it might be stuck there for a minute or two. Well, if we're both sitting here and you get yours right now, mm-hmm. you're going to get it before I, you know, before I have a chance to get
know.
In there.
I still there's would too much many rather variables.
This. Yeah. There's too many variables outside of our control once it leaves our system.
Sure.
For me to guarantee you any kind of speed or accuracy. And that also accounts for texting. It's a little more rare with texting, but texting, if you're like me, you've started to get a lot of spam in your
text.
Mm-hmm. And your cell phone carriers are trying to protect you, its users, from that. And Mouse Dining's messages oftentimes look like they could be spam. It's a short link or it's a short message with a link in it. And so what the best I could do was, I went and researched about 7 different texting providers, and I chose the one who I felt the most confident in their deliverability rates. And so we use bandwidth.com, and we switch to a toll-free number, because all of your local numbers are way more scrutinized than a toll-free number.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned this in one of my videos as well. I'm trying to get this information out there so people know, but a toll-free number is registered to me and my business.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I abuse it, they know right who to go to. And so cell phone carriers, because of that, give them a little bit less restriction, because if they abuse it, they can go right to the guy who broke the rules and who owns it. Local numbers are shared. It's kind of like having a shared, you know, web host. One person could be spamming everybody from that number, and then when they get shut down, anybody else using that gets shut down. So,
gotcha.
We migrated away from a local number it was probably January, maybe February, and we moved to Bandwidth. So our deliverability rates went up. To compete with some of our competitors, we actually increased the rate at which we get data from Disney now. And so that's sending out a whole lot more messages. So my texting bill every month is thousands of dollars.
That's ridiculous.
That's a lot of text messages.
It's we're doing the best we can to make it all work, but that's mm-hmm. I mean it's become more sophisticated than it needs to be, but we're going to the expense to make it work, because that was my commitment to our users when I said, you know, when you pay for this, it'll actually allow me to put some resources behind it
and sure, yeah.
make it good. So,
I'm glad that you have a lot of users that are willing to pay for the service, because it is a valuable service to be able to support it to actually function. Mm-hmm. And hopefully people that are listening to this, if you get dining reservations a lot, I would say sign up for this and use it. Like, it's so much easier, at least for me, to not be sitting there trying to get those reservations. Just go to Mouse Dining, log into your account, set your alerts, and then when you get the alert, go sign up instead of spending all this time every day going through Disney's app and going to the different things, like, you know, and pay for it. Because if you want a service like this to stick around, you're going to have to pay for it. I try telling people that all the time with services, that, you know, if you want something to stick around, you got to pay for it. And with your service, it's not like a Facebook or something where, you know, you're selling everybody's data, which is how Facebook makes money. You're just, you know, providing a service that obviously has some cost to it. Now, I was curious about this with the Disney system in general, and maybe you'd know this answer or not. But I was curious because when I was looking up dining reservations in the app or on your website, you have to select your party size. So does Disney, like, legitimately, I guess, limit, like, do they have 2-people reservations, 3-people reservations, 5-people reservations? Are those all different, or is a reservation a reservation a reservation?
Yes, they are different, but they are kind of grouped together.
Sure.
And so I long ago, I was worked at a restaurant, and, you know, we called those 2 tops, 4 tops, and 6 tops. And so those are the same size tables that you see in almost, you know, every restaurant. And 4 tops are going to be the bulk of your tables. You're going to have some 2 tops, and you're only going to have a few or a handful of 6 tops.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can configure them and push them all together, but during COVID, that wasn't happening. So Disney actually came out with a statement and said, we strongly encourage you to reduce your party size to 10 or fewer. And we have gone a step further. And so immediately we brought the max limit. I mean, they used to let you make reservations or at least request reservations for up to 50.
Wow.
When we started doing this years ago, but we have since brought that down to 10. You can still request more on Disney's website, but I will say, over 98% of all availability Mouse Dining sees is for parties of 6 or fewer.
Hmm. Sure, that makes sense.
And so you can set an alert for 7, 8, 9, or 10 on Mouse Dining still, but you have a less than 2% chance of availability as compared to splitting your party into 2 of 5, 2 of, you know, 1 of 6, 1 of 4, or otherwise.
So you had the 2, 4, 6. If I am either 3 or 4, it's coming from that same kind of pool. There's not like a 3 pool and a 4 pool or something like that.
Yeah. So the 4s are the most versatile, because you can throw a chair on it and make it a 5, pull a chair away from it, make it a 3. So it really, when we see availability for a 4, there's most often also availability for a 3 and a 5.
Gotcha.
For a 6, it's the same thing. And so you'll see it for 5 or 7. A 2, you'll see it for a 1 or a 3.
Mm-hmm.
But the 4 covers probably 60% of all of our alerts that we have. So, I'd have to pull up the data to confirm that, but, the 4 tops, and that's why our site defaults to 4, is because you're going to see the most availability for that. But if you're setting alerts, one tip that I would give others is set an alert for 1 person fewer, because my experience, and your experience may be different, and Disney may not agree or want this known, but whenever we've had to add one more to the party, it never seemed to be a problem.
Yeah, we've seen that too.
If you have a party of 7, check for a table of six, because you know a table of six is way easier to get a reservation for than seven.
And yeah, we saw that with Oga's, because we showed up and I was like, we were with somebody and I was like, that we didn't know was going to be with us. And we asked, we're like, so this person's with us too. Is that a problem? Oh yeah, no problem. We'll just change it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Disney employees are amazing and they're trained to be friendly and helpful and solve problems. And that's just one of the ways they're able to do that. And I don't know if it's worth putting that out there and just saying, hey, this is going to happen. Because then it encourages Disney to pull back on it, be like, oh, no, we won't.
Well, that's like, I don't know if you've seen the TikTok thing recently, but there's been this whole thing going around where this girl found out that if you dressed inappropriately, Disney would give you a free shirt or something. And so now that went viral. So all these people are coming dressed inappropriately to get free Disney merchandise.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. I had not seen that. That's terrible.
Yeah. No, she did this whole video. About a month ago now, Teresa and I watched it. And I just saw it show up like mainstream. It was on like some news thing or whatever that was like nationwide. And I was like, oh, well, this certainly blew up.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it, I do remember seeing a video, and I don't know if it was on a news station or online somewhere, but it was of a gal who employees were getting after for not wearing enough. And to me at the time, it didn't result in like free clothing or anything, but there was some altercation between.
So there was two videos. So one of them is Disney and it's at Epcot, and she's filming the cast member like walking her to the store and then like flips around and shows what it is she's wearing. The other one I think was at like Six Flags, and that person got removed because she was being like belligerent.
Maybe you may have seen that one.
Yeah, that was Six Flags. That one didn't have.
But what was crazy was the one for Epcot. It came out that their policy is like up to $40 or something, and you get like a T-shirt or something. She conned the person into giving her like a $70 Spirit jersey.
I don't know if it was that same person because she showed a T-shirt. But yeah, there's been people that have
used so
it
ridiculous.
Get, yeah. Anyways,
Disney provides great customer service, and that's what they're known for. And then people take advantage of it, and then Disney can't do it anymore, and it's a shame.
Yeah. Yep.
Just be nice. Disney does these nice things. If you take advantage, they're not going to do the nice things anymore. So when you're making your reservations, try to be as accurate as possible. Mm-hmm. Don't abuse adding extra people to your thing. But if you're in a weird case where it's like a once in a lifetime thing and it's one extra person, I don't think it's the end of the world.
Yeah, and because I get this question often, yes, you should include your infants.
Oh,
interesting.
Okay.
They occupy a space at the table. And so if you have a party of five and then you want to add an infant, that's very inconveniencing for trying to put a sixth chair on the fourth top.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That they've already tacked one additional chair onto.
Yep, that makes total sense. And if you think about it, the high chair basically does take up the spot of a seat. So it's not like the infant's going to be just sitting on your lap with you the whole time. They do need their own space as well. So since we're kind of going down this road, are there any other like tips or tricks or best practices for going out and trying to get some of these reservations, or the best way to use mousedining.com?
Yes. And I have a tutorial series on YouTube that talks about some of these. And so just the TLDR version of that is one, use the free service to begin with. Don't pay any money and let me prove to you that the service works. And then if you prefer to not have to renew your alert after every notification you receive, or you prefer to get them via text, or you need more alerts, then upgrade. I know I shouldn't be telling you that, but I invite everybody to do it for free because I want to prove the value of the service before I ever ask you for any money. So first
makes
tip,
sense.
Use the free version. It's free. Try it before you buy it. Second tip, respond as fast as you can. And knowing what we had kind of gone over about email and texts and the shortcomings of those technologies, try your best to work around it. And if not, contact support at Mouse Dining, or look up a tutorial online of how to adjust your phone settings to change those. But time matters. And so if you can adjust any settings on your end to get those messages faster, you will be more successful.
Awesome.
Third, there is some strategy to setting alerts, and we talked about some of those briefly with the, you know, the two top, four top, six top a little bit. But more than that, just set alerts for, go broad first. Set an alert for the date and the restaurant you want, and don't worry about the meal initially. Make sure you get into the restaurant that you want to dine at. It doesn't matter if it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Once you have that dining reservation, narrow your alert down further and say, okay, I really wanted to go to be our guest for lunch, but all they had was dinner. So now that you at least are going, you're guaranteed to be eating at Be Our Guest now. Now narrow it down to lunch. And then once you narrow it down to lunch, take any lunch thing you can get. And once you have lunch, then narrow it down to a preferred time. And the preferred time on Mouse Dining will look 60 minutes prior to or 60 minutes after the time you specify, which is a 2-hour window. So if you really want lunch right at noon, create your lunch alert for noon or as soon as it will allow you to, and wait and hope for that alert. Go broad first and narrow after, because I hate to hear when people say, I had these dining reservations and you were unable to get me a reservation at Chef Mickey's for breakfast. And I look and they're like, I want an 8 a.m. breakfast at Chef Mickey's on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but if you would have just said, I want Chef Mickey's for breakfast and not specified the time, you probably would have gotten an alert for like 6:55. Or maybe like 11:15,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't have been your preferred 8 o'clock, but you would have at least dined there.
Right.
And planned your day around that.
I mean, that's what happened to us. We selected for Lamplight for the we wanted brunch. So I went on your site and I selected five of us, Lamplight, on the day, brunch. I just selected brunch. I'm like, anytime mm-hmm. during brunch. And our brunch reservations were like 9:30. And I'm like, I don't care. We can eat brunch at 9:30. It's not the end of the world. I don't care. I don't need it to be at 11 or 10 or whatever. And Teresa was mentioning, she's like, that's a little early. I maybe not won't get my, what, Sea Witch, your drink that you were thinking.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but we're Central time. So 9:30 in California is like 11:30 Central. So it's drinking time.
Silver lining. You find it.
Plus, it'll be like, I don't know, it'll be like comfortable and stuff at 9:30. Like, it won't be the middle of the day when it's hot. Like, because we sat outside at Lamplight last time.
That's how I think that if going into trying to get specific times for dining with getting Disney reservations is just, I feel like you're just setting yourself up for failure. So I like the, I go on the generic thing too. Just, I would like to be there, hopefully maybe for lunch. Or hopefully maybe for dinner. If dinner is at 4 p.m., that's fine. Like, we got in.
Yeah, I end up recommending to people more often than I feel I need to, because it's kind of common sense. But I'm like, if prioritize your trip, and if dining at Chef Mickey's for breakfast is a priority for you, plan your day around that.
Yeah.
And or plan at least your morning around that and be flexible. Mm-hmm. A lot of people try and fit dining in after the fact, and I think they're misaligning some of their priorities. Apparently that's a big priority for you, but you've already made other plans or you have in your mind, I'm going to eat there at this same time. Like I eat breakfast every morning at 7:30, and it's like, you're on vacation. Just enjoy it. Go with the flow, be a little more flexible and enjoy yourself.
Well, and the hard thing too, especially for Walt Disney World, is basically all of pretty, it feels like more often than not, you're going to need a dining reservation for
most
those
places,
mm-hmm. you know, for the places. It's Disneyland. I think we're a little lucky because yes, there are dining reservations, but it's more minority.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the majority of places. The majority of places at Disneyland, you don't need the reservation for, but yes, we do have the bigger places you will need a reservation for. But the other nice thing too, even if you don't get a reservation, I don't know if it's the same for Walt Disney World. I have had luck, but usually you can just walk up and ask, and sometimes, you know, they'll have it.
People will have a reservation and just not show up. And then
we actually got, we walked up. And
I had to reserve a credit card. People, like, you'll lose money doing that, but people do it.
We walked up one time. It was, Vern and I were there during Pixar Fest, and we walked up to Blue Bayou and just asked and said, hey, do you guys have any, you know, open spots? And they actually had an open Fantasmic dining reservation that we just walked up and got. I ended up walking up to Be Our Guest, and that was my first ever time eating at Be Our Guest, which I like almost fell over because I didn't think you could do that for Be Our Guest, but it works. So I don't know. You just, you never know. Because I was
tip number four. Just if you're there on the parks, go ask.
I'm taking him stealing his thunder.
No, I mean, no,
that was all
tips.
You. That was all you.
He's gonna, yeah, you're gonna see a new YouTube video and it's gonna be that tip. No.
It just it doesn't hurt to ask, right? You're already there. You never know what kind of magic will happen.
What is your, like, when you go to Disneyland, like, what's your favorite place to eat?
Oh.
I mentioned that Disneyland Blue Bayou and Cafe Orleans. Just the Monte Cristo sandwich will always be it for me. The pommes frites.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. We went there for Touch of Disney, and there was a lot of good stuff there, honestly. Let me think.
Did you try the carbonara mac and cheese?
The carbonara mac and cheese.
I tried all the mac and cheese. I'm Georgian now, and I have mac and cheese. But yes, the carbonara mac and cheese was the best of the mac and cheese. There was a brisket one that was really good, I believe. Mm-hmm. But yeah, food in all Disney parks has really been elevated in the last five, maybe 10 years. So I do like in Galaxy's Edge at Docking Bay, they have a pork belly or something I love.
It's probably that fried tip yip thing that everybody
keeps
talking about.
No, the tip yip is chicken.
No, it's not the tip yip. Is it braised pork or
Yeah. Okay, I saw that because there's like two things on them. Tag and I have not eaten at Docking Bay 7. It's on our to-do list.
You know what's funny? I don't even remember walking by it.
No,
that's
it's kind
thing.
Of hidden. That's what the beauty of Galaxy's Edge. It's not like big billboard in your face, this is here kind of thing.
They have a braised pork or a braised beef something, and there's vegetables that they put in look kind of futuristic and Star Warsy, and I really like the flavors of
that. Is it the smoked
pork ribs? Is it the Batuan beef pot roast?
They
braised beef pot roast
Disney Worlds
pasta?
Or Disneyland?
Oh, that's Disney World. Yeah, they only
I think it is the Batuan beef pot roast then. That sounds the closest to it, but maybe they've changed the name or... Oh, let's see. Yeah, sorry. That's it.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, my God.
That's,
this one
that's
looks
really
look
good.
Enormous.
I wonder if I can... I want to get that, but I can't have the mushrooms. Maybe they'll do it
They'll
for
do
me.
It without mushrooms. How do you not just work for Disney? I'm just, you know...
I guess I would love to. So last time, when we were at Touch of Disney, we actually got our photo with Josh Damaro. My wife is just a fangirl of his. And so I think we were like kind of on our way out or whatever. And she's like, there's Josh. And she runs over to him and says, Josh, can we get a photo? And this is, you know, COVID still, you know, a thing. And so Josh is just kind of like, oh, stay back. Oh, like, yes, you can get a picture with me, but you guys stay up there. I'm going to stand in the back.
That's awesome.
Anyway, honestly, we bumped into Josh like, four more times throughout the trip because we were on the same flight home. So he was flying back to Orlando and we both grabbed the plane to Atlanta and he's in first class and on our same plane. So I see him at the airport. I saw him several more times that night just passing. And I'm like,
that's crazy.
Talk to him. I should just say, hey, like, do you know about Mouse Dining? Do you care that we exist?
And then you get a cease and desist the next day.
My wife's like, no, don't. And I'm just like, oh, man, part of me wants to just know. Like, do you guys care that we exist? So anyway, that's an aside.
We had a moment like that when we were at D23 and we talked to the two Disneyland ambassadors. And they're like, because we were in DL Weekly like shirts or something, and they're like, oh, do you listen to that? We're like, oh, that's us. And he's like, oh, I listen. And I was like,
you do? You're the
ambassador listens.
That's awesome.
Why do you
they
need
just
to
got new
to
Disney World ambassadors, which makes me think Disneyland is getting ambassadors soon. So Justin and Rafa are BFFs in the podcast world. Anyway,
honestly, this podcast is a big step into the spotlight for Mouse Dining. Frankly, we've kind of just been quiet and doing our own little thing. And
well, hopefully, we don't get you a cease and desist.
No, when your invite came, I was like, "That's awesome! I'm glad people want to talk about it." And because I don't know how to talk about it, but I'm the guy at the party that like I'm just going to sit there by myself. But if you come and talk to me, I'm just going to spill it all out. So. Come talk to me. Come find me.
How often can, like, me as a user of mousedining.com, how often, like, how successful are you at getting reservations for people? Like, is it, you know... Like,
what's your success rate?
Yeah, what's your success rate for that? I guess it depends on what they're really asking for, because we talked about asking for something very specific versus very broad. But what do you know, have a kind of a gauge on how helpful the service is or how often it gets people those reservations?
Unfortunately, we don't have like a direct metric that I can look at, because once the alert leaves us, it's all in the hands of the user. But what I can say is this, I do all the customer service, mm-hmm. and I get an occasional kind of really frustrated person,
sure,
because this is an emotional thing.
Yeah.
And people are really like, you know, they have anxiety over making sure their kid has this perfect trip to Disney. And I get that. Mm-hmm. But I've had a lot of customer service jobs, and none of them have I had as many people come back to me and just out of the blue or just like, thank you so much for what you've built. This helped me get X reservation and it was fantastic. Thank you so much. Like, I get those probably not daily, but I probably get 3 to 5 of those a week.
Nice. That's great.
I'm one of those.
And I respond to those. Thank you. And you are one of those. But I typically respond to those and just, I'm like, you know, thank you so much. Like, on a given day, I'll probably have to go through 40 or 50 emails of people that, you know, are having issues or have questions or billing problems or something. But it's always refreshing just to get to that one. And it's just like, you helped me get this. And I'm like, that's why we do this. That's why I continue doing what I do. And so I really enjoy hearing those. But I don't have a really good success rate. I guess I would say our reputation kind of precedes us. Most people will tell you they've had a great experience with us. I have run into some people who have used competitors and just said, hey, I had alerts set up in both places and they beat you to it. And sometimes they'll probably get an email the same. And all of that kind of just derives from the fact that Disney doesn't make this data available in real time and that we all have to go get it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's inherent delays in fetching it. Just the same delays as if you're fetching your email from your email server. You can't get it every second and you aren't notified immediately when that happens. You know, in kind of best case scenario, sometimes we're checking maybe as often as 3 to 5 minutes in best case. And so 3 to 5 minutes goes by between when we saw it last and when we check again. Of course, somebody else is going to have a chance to get it. And there's, of course, a chance that we're never going to see it. So what I tell people is if you really need that dining reservation, go sign up for all the services. And then go sit there in front of your computer and just refresh your computer the whole time, because that's how you would do it. If it's that important to you, and you know, and you get upset or frustrated with my service, like that's what it's going to take to get it. All my service does is allow you to just kind of set it, forget it, go about your day, and just react quickly when we notify you.
Mm-hmm. People also have to remember, and I think with Disney. And I feel like this has come up more and more recently, is it's a vacation. It's not supposed to be stressful. Like, you should go. You should have a good time. If you can get into a restaurant you're excited about, it's like icing on the cake. But you shouldn't let the fact that you couldn't get into Lamplight Lounge ruin your whole vacation. You know, it's like people get so caught up on these little details. It's like, just go have fun. You're there. Most people are there with their families. Just have good family time. Enjoy the atmosphere. Enjoy the attractions, the entertainment, and what you can get to do. Just because one thing like dining didn't work out for you shouldn't ruin your whole experience.
I would say more often than not, though, because there's been times, even like with our upcoming trip, I checked, this was before we knew about your service, and I was checking because we were trying to do brunch for Lamplight, and I just kind of kept checking just because, you know, if it happens, it happens. But I, more often than not, it does happen, and you do, the stars align, and you will get that reservation. So I would say also don't lose hope. And like we were talking about earlier, you can always go up and ask, because you just never know. Someone else could have had a reservation and they weren't able to make it for this reason.
Or even when you're in the park. I mean, when James and I were in Disney World, and I know this isn't dining, this is Fast Pass, but it's kind of the same similar system. We were on the train trying to see if there was something available for Mine Train. So Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. And we just happened to have, like, boom, it popped up. We're like, oh, cool, boom. So even if you're in the park, look for that stuff, because people cancel. Like, you know, I've done that a couple times where it's like, oh, well, we'd rather go do this thing and our reservations this time. Well, it's a little different with some dining, because they do require you to put down you know, reservation or a deposit or something. But, you know.
So totally different track, Dustin. We talked about what some of your favorite foods in the parks are. What are some of your favorite, like, desserts or beverages? They can be adult or they can be non-adult beverages.
Well, I mean, there's just so many.
There are,
And I'm really trying to focus on Disneyland over Disney World, but Disney World's just so much more fresh in my mind. But
it can be Disney World. It's fine.
We'll allow it.
My wife and I go every year, hopefully once, sometimes more than once, to Disney's Food and Wine, and we love it.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't been to Epcot's Food and Wine Festival, it's actually beginning here in 2.5 weeks on, like, the 18th. And my wife and I will be down there for Mouse Dining, covering some of that. But we love Food and Wine. There's always kind of the... Have you guys been?
We did. We got lucky because they postponed it last year. So it just so happened that... our August, because it was like a hybrid festival. They kind of did the garden festival and Food and Wine kind of at the same time. So we did get to do Food and Wine while we were there.
So they do the kiosks all throughout in addition to the restaurants. But I mean, I literally just throw like $200 or $300 on a gift card and just go. and I don't drink alcohol or anything, but you know, the coffee's great. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they'll have the staples every year. Like, you go to La Cellier, Canada, and they'll have the La Cellier filet mignon. Yep. And that's amazing. So when you talk about, like, food, and I'm thinking, like, small plates and drinks, like, Food and Wine is just so much who my wife and I are. And that's why Mouse Dining is, like, so much in our blood. We love it. Drink-wise, though, they have some really good... slushies and whatnot. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I mean, sometimes it's so hot you're just constantly drinking around, because Epcot in general is not got a lot of shade.
No.
And then you're hoofing it, you know, a mile and a quarter around the showcase.
Yeah.
And
you're working off all those calories that you're
doing. Right. Keep it down. But so the one at Food and Wine that's unique to me for a couple different reasons is in Brazil, in the Brazil kiosk, there's a, they call it pão de queijo, which is cheese bread or something similar to that.
Yeah, but
I actually spent some time down in Paraguay in South America, and they had a very similar bread down there, and I love it.
Yeah,
it is a extremely cheesy bread that literally, like, as you pull it apart, the cheese just kind of comes with it almost. And if you get that at the right temperature and the right consistency, and they use a very special South American cheese, so good.
Now you're making me hungry for this.
Get to Brazil and try the, I think it's pão de queijo, because it's in Portuguese, but it's pão de queijo or pão de queijo. And it's, I could eat 5 of those. So there's a little tidbit nugget for next time you go.
Yum. Next time you come out to Disneyland, you will have to try. I feel like Disneyland and DCA have been doing a really nice job. Of course, yes, you can drink alcohol in DCA, and there are specific places now in Disneyland that you can drink alcohol.
Blue Bayou.
Yep, Blue Bayou now being one, and then also Oga's Cantina, as well as Club 33. But they've been doing, I feel, because I'm not one to go doing too much drinking at an amusement park. I think that, for me, that's just a bad, not very good mixture. But
you don't want to go on things when you're tipsy.
I get dehydrated very easily, so I just don't. Doesn't seem like a good. Anyways, getting sidetracked. There are so many fantastic non-alcoholic.
Oh yeah,
fun drinks. Yep. Teresa's
obsessed
now.
With one.
I am obsessed with the pear of dice soda from the one of the cozy cones in Radiator Springs. It's so good.
She bought stuff to make like a homemade version.
I do. Yeah, I make it at home. That's how much I like it. There's also quite a few delicious non-alcoholic drinks at Lamplight Lounge. Yeah, it's like it's like a Sprite or a 7-Up, and it's prickly pear like juice that's in it. Okay. It's so fun.
It was very good.
Very good.
I like
very
a mimosa,
refreshing.
So just substitute the OJ for
there
a.
There you go.
You know,
nice. So, yeah. Anyways, yeah. Lots of very fun tasting. We had, what was it, the Goofball Island, I think we had? And, like, you had something about, like, Falling in Style was another one that you... There's all sorts of fun
things. They always name them funny things, and I don't remember, but they're good.
Yep, but anyways.
Well, then you get the alcoholic ones. Like, Kate got that one that was, like, $15, and I was like, whew. And she drank it quick. It was mostly ice.
I can't afford alcohol. That's primarily why I don't drink
it. Yeah, right. That's the other thing, too, is, yeah, being able to afford it. I do want to try the Sea Witch.
Well, it just looks so dang cool.
It looks so cool, and it sounds very good.
I would just say, so I cover this a little bit in that last YouTube video. I'd have to go watch it again. I make those things so fast and throw them together. Sometimes I forget what I say in them.
I understand. I feel the same way sometimes with the podcast.
You know, with the support that we've been given by current users and future users, mm-hmm. I want to be good stewards with that money and that profit, and I want to continue to grow and build things. And we've got ideas for a lot of new things that are in the works, but I'm going to double down on Mouse Dining and make it the anchor in order for all these other things to grow. So any other pains that users might have, I say users, but guests might have going to Disney parks, we want to be able to solve those with technology. At our core, we're a technology company, and we're not a Disney travel agent. We're not an agency, and we don't have a lot of experience with in the travel industry. So we're trying to stick to our strength and build tools and resources that are valuable to people headed to the parks. And so with that, like, if you think about the typical trip to Disney, it includes hotel and travel and possible transportation while you're there and maybe a Disney cruise. And so these are all things we're looking at building tools around in the future. And so that's kind of what Mouse Dining is up to. But I'm going to build out the core of Mouse Dining first and really make that the go-to resource for all things Disney food. And you know, in the future, I hope one day they'll be on the parks, and instead of pulling up Disney's app, they'll pull up Mouse Dining to get what they need, because it's just easier and more convenient and more personalized to them and their tastes. So that's really kind of my next step.
Sounds like there's some exciting things in the works, and we're very, very interested to see what comes next for Mouse Dining. We are thrilled that we found you, like Tag has said. And I think the service that you provide is wonderful and needed and super helpful, because it takes a lot of time, stress, guesswork, and like random luck, I guess, of getting a dining reservation. It kind of, you know, puts that all to the side, so me as a person can still go through my day like a normal person instead of sitting like a crazy one, which is how I feel like shop Disney events. You like sit there like a crazy person, just refresh. We're hoping that one of these times will be the magic click to make it, you know, make what you need come available. So I think this is a fantastic thing, and I'm excited to see what other tools you are building to also help other guests.
If everything of a Disney vacation could be as easy as signing up and doing the diet, because literally I was on your website for 3 minutes, and the next day I got an email notification. So, you know, that was a lot easier. I mean, it takes me 3 minutes just to get to the Disneyland app and go find the restaurant I'm looking for, then do all that. So,
it's magic.
Yeah. And so if anybody who's listening, if you're intrigued by future tools, if you yearn for things to be a little bit easier, perhaps head over to Mouse Dining and use that current service and help build the future of Disney tools.
There you go.
I really appreciate that. That means a lot, and that's really what all we're trying to do, and I'm excited to be able to do that and make this my full-time job now. So thank you to all of our existing users and supporters, because that's allowing me to do just that. So thank you.
I think we're down to our last question, however. So I'd be really interested, because I think you're going to have an interesting view on this. So if you could work at Disneyland, what would you do? Sky's the limit. It can be any job, even one that you've made up.
I guess it depends on the season of life that you're in. And right now, I'm, you know, younger. I would have killed to be an animator and in the early stages of Pixar and designing some of those. I fall in love with the characters, and so that's an easy thing. But in my season of life today, operating Mouse Dining, we talked briefly. I had a chance to meet Josh tomorrow, and you know his job seems pretty appealing to me. Like, I just like understanding how things work and operate. So at my core, I'm more of I tell people I'm kind of an operations and marketing professional is kind of what my career has taken me into. And you know he's the COO whatever of Disney Parks, and there's so many aspects of Disney Parks and just the size and the logistics of getting it all done. That would be just fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. You know, and a step above that, you go to Bob Iger and new guy, whatever.
Chapek.
The other Bob.
Yep.
The other Bob. I mean, those guys have so many things that they're responsible for and so many teams and people respond. Like, that's a huge mantle to hold on your shoulders. Yeah. But I kind of would like that, and just to see it all function. And because I would say my strength in business is to understand the problem, rip everything apart, and build it back better. And that's kind of my career path. That's just kind of how I've ended up where I am. But that's what we're in the process of doing with Mouse Dining right now. Is I built it. I look back 6 years ago, I'm like, what were we thinking when we built that? We're going to rip it all apart and build it back better. So we've started that process, but I'm going to bring that to the finish line here in the next few months. But I think their jobs would be fascinating.
I would love, and you're a data person, you said a couple times.
Yeah.
I would just love to see all of the data Disney has for like everything. Because they do, right? They have data for Disney Plus, like who's watching what. Why, you know, everything you could get as a YouTube person. Because YouTube, you can look at things and see like when people stopped viewing it and when, you know, how many people stuck through and the average view time and like all these data points. And then with the park, like how many people park hop? And when they park hop, like how many people, like how long does it take for somebody to go from the front gate to their first attraction? And then how many, like just all of that cool data of like how long do people take going from thing to thing versus being on the thing? And like just all of that cool data would be amazing just to understand like humanity, because really it's understanding humanity, right? Because everybody, you know, there's patterns behavior that you can get. And it's just understanding that. And I mean, Disney must be good at it, because our community and us, I mean, we're there drooling at what the next thing they're going to release is. And you know, we've all been trained, you know.
Well, I will say, speaking of data, I will say that it would be curious to know what these old Disney dining reservation systems are built on, because I don't think it's anything recent.
Probably not. I mean, we were looking at that when Touch of Disney tickets and stuff, like their system, you know, I was laughing because I'm like, why can't you hire some people from like Amazon and learn how to scale your stuff better? Like, because like their site would go down over, like Shop Disney is just a disaster when there's like a big release. And it's like, you're a giant, massive corporation. How can you not have this? You know, when Black Friday happens, Amazon continues to work. Why don't you have people keeping your Shop Disney working? It's just so baffling to me.
Yeah, they've been around long enough, and they're a large enough corporation now. I think they've just got a lot of internal hardware that is just going to be so astronomically expensive to replace.
Oh,
that they
sure.
just keep putting these really wonky things on top of all this old technology instead of replacing it all entirely. And so when we look at Disney dining data, it's sometimes amazing to us how it
it's amazing this thing works at all.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dustin, for spending time with us and with our audience.
Yes.
for the last little bit here and talking about your business and your hopes and dreams for the future. Mm-hmm. And just having a really good functional tool.
Yeah.
That if somebody just needs one dining reservation for like one upcoming trip, use the free version. You get a good thing. But if you're going on like a once in a lifetime Disney World trip, for an example, or if you haven't been to Disneyland for a long time and you want to hit up all the new things, you know, pay the monthly fee, get a bunch of things, get things sent to you, text message, and get what you need.
Absolutely. So, no, this has been a blast. I really appreciate it. And I've had a great time.
Well, now it's time to return to Trivia Land with producer Vern to get the answers to this week's trivia that hopefully we didn't completely screw up.
No, you did. Well,
you sound so confident.
Well, okay, so as I said that, I was looking down at my notes and the very first question and the way that you answered it, and that caused me the pause. But after that, you did great.
Okay, well, so, let's get through it.
Yes. So, for your very first question, what was the last train station to be built on the Disneyland Railroad? Bonus, what was the original name? Your answer was the Fantasyland Station, and the original name was the Toontown Depot.
No, flip that.
No, that was your answer. I confirmed with you.
Well, Toontown, no, it's Toontown now.
Yes.
And its previous thing was Fantasyland.
No, I confirmed with you.
Oh, you did. Stop trying to trip us up, you rude.
And either way, you were wrong.
Okay.
The last station to be built was Videopolis Station in 1985, which was later rethemed into Toontown Depot. And the Fantasyland Station got torn down.
Oh.
To make way for It's a Small World.
Interesting.
So they lost the station back there for a while.
So we got the bonus part of it, right?
No, you didn't even get the bonus part because you got the...
Because
the original name was Videopolis. And then they renamed it.
So yeah, they renamed it to Toontown.
But the bonus was what was the original name. And the original name was Videopolis.
Oh, the original name. Okay, so we got the question right.
No.
Yes, we did.
No, because the last station built was the Toontown. I mean, you kind of... No, because you said that Fantasyland was the last one to be built, but Fantasyland wasn't the last one to be built. Fantasyland
got torn
down.
He's getting us on a technicality, Teresa.
Yes, he is. I mean, very picky.
Well, it had been torn down.
No. Oh, well, yeah, but I thought you said that's what it had been named, and we said the last station to have been built was...
Okay, so I'll give you a half credit Fantasyland.
Because we said it was now the Toontown station, so we're talking about the right.
But I guess that wasn't the question that was asked, though. Technically, he didn't say what is it known as now. So I understand that.
We said what was the last station to have been built. Bonus, what was it called before?
Right.
What was the original name? So the answer should be Toontown Depot. With the original name being Videopolis. Right?
The current Toontown Depot is the last station that was built.
Yeah.
And its original name was Videopolis.
So
Fantasyland Station was the last one built, and it would now be called Toontown Depot.
Let's just take the half point and move on.
But the Fantasyland Station doesn't even exist.
We'll take the half point, Vern.
So, I don't even know if you deserve a half point.
Oh, my goodness.
No, you get half point.
You know what's going to happen?
Half point for Toontown.
We're going to have emails. This will be adjudicated by our listeners.
Very much just re-listen to how everything was said.
This is... No, I get what I get what he's saying though. So it will be adjudicated by our listeners, I'm telling you.
Your second question, your second regular round question submitted by listener Donna S. How tall is the Matterhorn attraction?
Oh God.
With Tag saying 157 feet and Teresa saying 154 feet, the correct answer I was looking for was 147 feet.
Oh,
so close.
Very close.
I was 10 off.
I'm impressed that we were as close as we were.
That's true.
Actually. Dang, that was good. I'm also confused that it's like so 158 they'd have to put a blink, or 148 they'd have to put a blinking light on.
Maybe it's 150 and then they went a couple feet below.
Maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe. That would make sense.
Your third regular round question. Music from what movies are featured in Mickey and the Magical Map? You said Princess and the Frog, Tangled, Jungle Book, Fantasia, Little Mermaid, Pocahontas, Mulan. The only one that I was looking for that you didn't say was Lilo and Stitch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I forgot about that part.
Now that you say it, I can like hear it in my mind.
And Stitch comes out.
Yep.
Dang.
You know, we're going to get some grief because there's some big Lilo and Stitch fans in our community.
Oh.
And your fourth and final regular round question submitted by listener Jill M. Which Imagineer designed fresh sets and a facade inspired by Mary Blair's sketches for It's a Small World when it moved to Disneyland? Both of you agreed that the correct answer should be Mark Davis. However, the correct answer I wanted was Raleigh Crump.
Oh, yes. Dang it. Dang it.
Tracy, I think you need to read some more or something. You keep, like, kicking yourself on these.
I know.
I feel like you're really good at the Imagineers.
Usually
sometimes.
She is. I thought this one was going to be a gimme.
Like I said, I could see like them talking about the facade, like building the facade, talking about the facade.
The only thing I ever think of with the facade is Mary Blair because she was in that 65th thing and she was doing the lighting on it with Walt walking there.
Oh, yeah.
And your bonus question for today. The Ghost Host was originally going to take a physical form. Nods to the intended character can be seen throughout the attraction. Who was going to be the narrator? You didn't just know who the narrator was. You knew every location that the narrator can be found throughout the attraction.
Woo.
That was a raven.
Woo.
Who is now not the narrator. It just randomly caws at you.
Just randomly
caw,
caws.
Caw.
So, listeners, how did you do listening at home? How do you think Tag and Teresa did? Do you think that you've got the right questions that could really stump them in the future? If you think you've got some real zingers for them, feel free to send those in to trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, next week, just to reiterate again, next week we won't have any news, but we will be reporting on stuff from the parks directly.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.